Welcome back, readers and romance seekers, to Behind the Page. I hope we are all stuffed to the brim with turkey or your Thanksgiving protein of choice, and ready to take one more glance at Reawakened at the South Pole. So a little bit of housekeeping before we get any further than this. I want to give a huge thank you to our technical advisor, Kongyan. We seem to have had a bit of a bug situation on our website this week, and it was through his diligence and hard work that we were able to get back up and running. Sadly, episode 15, the one we are about to talk about, it was lost to the ether. So if it looks a little bit different from when you first listened to it, it's because we had to re-upload the entire episode. Amusingly, I could not, for whatever reason, remember what the title even was, so that's why things have changed. Yep, and that'll learn me. Who knew that the internet was not, in fact, forever? Who knew where that came from? And yes, I did check the Wayback Machine, but that was no luck. So now that I know better, maybe perhaps I should start keeping a separate record of these sorts of things. But again, a big, big thank you to my tech guy. Without him, I wouldn't have a website, let alone a whole dang podcast, and I am forever grateful. But yeah, we gotta love those ups and downs of podcasting, right? I cannot wait to look at this and laugh one day. Honestly, really, I'm laughing even now. It was really kind of quite the moment for me. I have a habit of going back and listening to the episodes before I sit down for my behind the page prep. It's not scripted like the regular episodes are, but I do have some points laid out so I don't, you know, completely ramble. Not that rambling doesn't happen. Anyway, but you could probably imagine my confusion when I went to look at the website and I could not even find the barest hint of a trace of episode 15. So for one horrifying moment, I thought I had hallucinated the entire process of producing that episode. I went back into my base files. Everything was still there, thankfully. Oh, hello, puppy. I am being joined by a dog. So at least I knew that I had made the darn thing. It had just vanished completely from the website. Alas, it was a casualty of the circumstances, and with its sacrifice, I have gained a very important lesson. Speaking of effort, oh yeah, that was a smooth segue. Anyway, we've already heard my rant last time about the lack of sexy in the sexy books. So now I'm just really peeved at the lack of effort in general on Harlequin's part. I think it probably says a lot about the targeted demographic for the medical romances, when the only print copies that I can get my hands on are the large print versions. I really did try to find, like, the regular versions, but, you know, considering how badly these are printed, it's probably a good idea that I got stuck with the large prints anyway. I'm not convinced that they have any regular print versions, so whenever I dive into this particular genre, I gotta put up with the large letters because, again, I am a book dragon and I have to have every single book on my shelf. But then again, also, my eyes are going, so it's probably a good thing, maybe. Ah, yes, the perils of age. Of course, I do realize that Harlequin isn't exactly a prestigious printing house, but I can't imagine that a publishing house of Harlequin's size and shape can at least get better than passable printing. I know I probably sound really stuck up with this kind of stuff, and I wouldn't blame anybody for thinking it, but come on, you gotta take some pride in your work, yeah? It's just, I don't know, it's just every now and then I just see such a dud and it's crazy. Even looking at the current new releases for the medical romances, all of the covers, every single one of them, they look like they were pulled from some sort of stock photo cache of people just looking at a camera and smiling. There is nothing on any of these covers that would suggest that they have anything to do with the medical field whatsoever. I mean, come on, we're going to be doing some medical stuff. Why not add, like, you know, scalpels or something? I don't know. It's just, I get that Harlequin has themes for each of their imprints, but the medical covers are just so goddamn boring that it's almost sickening. A story as bland as The Surgeon and the Princess deserves these covers, not Reawakened at the South Pole. really, I'm just frustrated with how generic it all is. I almost feel bad for the graphic artists. They have to make all of these covers, and it's the same thing over and over and over again, and there's nothing new or different. Hopefully their paycheck is nice enough to allow them to chase other artistic outlets. I might be projecting. But yeah, it looks like Harlequin is definitely operating on the quantity over quality model. They stick to authors that they know who they can sell, who they can print with minimal changes in editing, and they throw them probably into some random image generator for the covers. But I just cannot stop thinking that they could do better. I know they can. I've seen them do better. And I think that's probably what drives me bonkers. I know that they can produce good work. They have good books, great covers. So I just don't know how many of these duds just keep getting through. But enough with that rant. Let's actually get into the story itself. And for Reawakened at the South Pole, this novel would have been a good candidate for a 4-star rating or even a gold star shelf contender. The premise was really unique, and I was really surprised. I never thought I'd be reading about a story about the South Pole medical staff. I think it takes place at the Amundsen Scott South Pole Station. I think that's what it is. And it sounds like the author, one of those little, at the beginning, book notes, she talked about how her child was doing a project, a research project on the South Pole research stations. And she thought to herself, like, well, that's a thought. And so I really congratulate her for trying to, you know, push the boundaries of what we might consider a medical romance. And I have heard some incredible stories of doctors living in those conditions. They have to work with what they have, and what they have is not always very much. There is an incredible photo from the 60s of a Russian doctor performing surgery on himself, an appendectomy, while he was on an Antarctic expedition. You've probably seen this photo at least once. So while the doctor and nurse in our story have better facilities and access of stuff to that particular doctor, it's still a pretty bad situation if somebody at that pole needs serious surgery. Because the thing about, you know, living at the South Pole, especially over the summer, is the weather is so bad, you really can't get any flights in or out. So if you've got something really serious happening, you're kind of out of luck and you got to do with what you have. So really, I want to applaud the creativity of our author and taking us further than I would have expected. I did think that she might have played it a little safe, though. So I'll get into that probably a little bit more. There may be other South Pole medical romances out there, but since I'm new to the romance genre in general, this is kind of special for me. And so about that safety, I'll say that I was probably a little more than peeved that it was guy doctor and lady nurse. Yes, she was a nurse practitioner, which is nothing to sneeze at. A lot of people see nurse practitioners when they can't get in to see their doctor, and the nurse practitioner can really give them what they need in that moment. But the, you know, doctor plus nurse, doctor's guy, lady is the nurse, it's a pairing I see way too often. In defense of the novel, it looks like the Amundsen Scott South Pole Station typically employs one MD and one nurse practitioner. So I get why it has to be one of each, but this is fiction, y'all. Why? We can maybe fudge names a little bit. We could make up our own research station based off of the Amundsen Scott Station. We can have both of our mains hold their MDs. Anything's possible, right? Or maybe Helena could have been the doctor. How about that? Or maybe I've been drinking too much early aughts feminism. Who knows? But more to my rating, really. I mentioned that the author kept finding too many convenient contrivances to force our couple to communicate. Ooh, gotta love that alliteration, huh? But after only two incidences of a patient with a problem that mirrors the problems of our couple, I was pretty much over it. After a while, it just really feels forced, and that can inhibit anything genuine between our pairing. So it was a real shame. So there's some good creativity in the story, but the author is still playing it really safe. I will note that while the surgeon and the princess actively avoided anything to do with our current pandemic, I did appreciate that little nod to contact tracing and our South Pole romance. But for now, I think that is enough time spent in the South Pole, really before it starts to get very cold up here for the winter. So let's go ahead and take a look at what I read this week. And I am really excited for this. This week, I read Iron Widow by Shirin J. Zhao. I want to begin for a general apology for any pronunciations here on out. I have never been good with Chinese words or names, but I will be damned if I don't give it a solid effort. But yes, Iron Widow. You might know Zhao from their YouTube channel. They got a serious dose of luck and timing when they put out their first episode, picking apart the new live-action Mulan movie in all its horrible glory. They posted that one video and it basically exploded all across the internet, and now they have a very successful YouTube channel. I think they said that they got 200,000 subscribers with only two episodes. It's impressive. Yes, I applaud. You can hear me, my little tiny golf clap here. But they compared the Mulan movie with actual Chinese culture, and from there they've built up a large repertoire of looking at modern Chinese-inspired films like the original Mulan and Avatar and the Last Airbender and Kung Fu Panda, of all things. Kung Fu Panda is actually a great movie. Anyway, but before that they got the luck with their channel, they actually had a book ready for publishing, and that was Iron Widow. Iron Widow is a science fiction novel inspired by Wu Zaiten, the only female Chinese emperor. The world that she lives in borrows a lot from old traditional Chinese customs, but it adds in Pacific Rim-style fighting mecha robots. Who doesn't want that, right? If you liked Pacific Rim, I'd give this a look, but don't expect the same kind of synergy, let's just say that. Zaiten's sister was a concubine pilot, rather a young woman who was paired off with a male robot pilot, and together, the pilot and concubine fight these large alien beasts that are trying to take over their world. The trouble is that the exertion of these battles often overwhelms the young woman, and many women like this lose their lives. So when Zaiten's sister meets this fate, she gets herself assigned to the pilot that killed her and embarks on a journey of revenge. So from here on out, there's going to be some spoilers. So if you want a pure read of the story, I would stop here. So in the story originally, Zaiten, when she found out that her sister had died, she found out that it wasn't necessarily through a battle fight. She found out that the pilot himself just kind of killed her the regular way, the way you would kind of kill other women. Anyway, so she goes in hoping to maybe kill the guy before she ever has to get into one of the capsules. However, they have a surprise moment where it's like, oh, we got to get into a battle pod right now. So she ends up in the pod with him, and in a shock to everyone, herself included, instead of her dying, she kills the pilot. So now she's branded as something called an Iron Widow, and she is paired with another pilot known as the Iron Demon, a powerful, powerful man who kills every single one of his concubines whenever he goes into battle. And her story ignites when she survives him as well. Many characters in this story are somewhat based on historical figures, but they are not one-to-one recreations. Zhao actually has a couple of videos exploring the life of the real Wu Zaiten, so I highly recommend you go watch those right now. And the Iron Demon, his character, I think it's Yi Shimin, I think that's how you say it. His character is based on another emperor. And I will say that it is a young adult novel. And for sure, it's another one of those novels that's written for the young adults with axes to grind. And let me tell you, there is some grinding axes. So be prepared for that going in. there were moments where I was taken aback by Zaitin's bloodthirsty ruthlessness. But that made her character all the more engaging. Because I don't necessarily want a character that has the same morality that I do. I want to see how they approach their problems and how they solve those problems. And in Zaitin's case, sometimes it's just grabbing a guy and just straight up murdering him. And also, I was so afraid that this book was setting up the oh-so-typical adult love triangle, where the girl falls in love with two guys and now they've got a fight over her. I should have had better faith in Zhao, because that is not what I got. I got an honest-to-goodness polyamorous relationship that chopped off all my expectations at the knees. And I could not be more excited. They make the joke in the book that says the triangle is the strongest shape. And yes, yes. But come on, who hasn't screamed at Bella Swan? Like, just get with both of them. You can have both. You can have the vampire and the dog. Go for it. You've screamed that at least just once. Was it just me? Never mind. But it was so refreshing to get this plot line. And I am so happy for it. So please, please, go out and read Iron Widow right now. Also, do yourself a favor, get the audiobook. I know that I've praised the art form of the audiobook before, but here it actually has a purpose. So I, for the life of me, cannot correctly pronounce Chinese words and names. And when I read these names and words translated into the English alphabet, all bets are really off. So the matter compounds with the fact that both Mandarin and Cantonese are both tonal languages, and that just, it cannot translate to the written English word. But the audiobook narrator, Rong Fu, has you covered. You get the names and words how they are supposed to be pronounced, and I am all the better for it. So with that, I will leave you until next time. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I hope to see you again next week when we read Christmas Data Breach by Katie Richards. Thank you for joining me, readers and romance seekers, and I hope to see you once again for Hopelessly Romantic. If you like the show, please visit us at hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. If you have questions or just want to recommend a read, please email us at contact@hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. Also, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will go a long way to help the show, and that way I can keep bringing you lots of fun episodes. The show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster. Our technical advisor is Kwang Yin Cho. Again, a big thank you. And Hopelessly Romantic is an Age with K production. And remember that it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.